This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, Tee Shao Ik. It's our Ask a Doctor segment today, our open clinic show where we get a healthcare provider, a healthcare professional to answer all your questions on a specific area of medicine. And today in the studio with me, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, Dr. Soma Sundaran Satapam. And he will be answering your questions related to common plastic surgery procedures. I'm just thinking of things like facelifts, Botox injections, liposuctions, so much more that we hear about, that you may be curious about, you may have questions about. So do call us. The lines are open, 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp our U mobile number, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We will also be getting Dr. Soma to address questions related to the practice of plastic and cosmetics surgery, what you need to know or consider or ask your surgeon before undergoing such procedures, and who is the right person to seek out for these procedures. Dr. Soma, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you so much for asking me to come. It's a pleasure.
Perhaps I could start with what may be a very basic question, Dr. Soma. You're a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. There's also cosmetic surgery, like I mentioned. Are these terms different and in what way?
I think plastic surgery is an all-encompassing term that actually includes multiple subspecialties like burns, pediatric plastic surgery. There's also a component of hand surgery, burn surgery, craniofacial surgery. And finally, the Cinderella, the icing on the cake, is cosmetic surgery.
All right.
You know, but that, unfortunately, due to the media, cosmetic surgery is, of course, more popular than any of the other branches of plastic surgery.
That's right. What are some of the most common plastic surgery procedures that perhaps you'd say fall under some of those main categories you mentioned?
Like, for example, burn surgery is very common, especially in government hospitals. You know, you do that regularly. And it's complications like contractures, you know. When the burns heal with a thick scar across a joint, it tends to rotate the joint into a specific position and prevent movement. Fingers get like claw fingers, your neck is contracted, or maybe your knee joint. So to release those contractures, then you need plastic surgery.
Mm.
Next is, of course, children born with deformities. Mm. You have children with cleft lip and palate or some craniofacial abnormalities. These are also commonly treated at most hospitals, you know, where they have plastic surgeons. Hand surgery, treated by both hand surgeons and plastic surgeons as well. And finally, you come to the commonest, what we see in private practice is skin cancers and head and neck cancers. Mm. So this is actually quite common. You might think that this is more common in the overseas countries with Caucasian skin. But actually, recently, we find that even Malaysian skin, across the races, there's an increased incidence of skin cancers.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So you do develop it. And I usually get it referred by the dermatologist who picks it up early. And then some, unfortunately, do turn up late. So we need major reconstructive surgery as well. So there you go.
And we're talking about removal of the tumour.
Well, you must understand, the face is made up of so many parts. You have the lips, nose, eyelids and ears. And unfortunately, these parts, there are no replacement, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
You can't get a replacement part right off the shelf from your local supermarket. Not doesn't exist. So we'll have to beg and borrow from another part of your body to reconstruct it, you see. Mm. And the reconstruction may not be as good as the original, what God gave. So there may be functional deficits as well. Your eye may not close properly. Your lip, when you smile, may not be the same smile. And sometimes when you try to slurp on a straw, you may not be able to do it.
Mm.
And when you're lying on bed, you may drool from one side. So these are some of the problems that happen after cancer surgery of the face.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think those that you've listed out, barring cosmetic surgery, are, I think we'll leave those aside because patients will come to you because there is an urgent need, you know,
yes.
And not so much of an elective need. So if we try to focus more on cosmetic surgery today so that people can get their questions answered,
sure.
Between cosmetic surgery and something like aesthetic medicine, which we see the term being used a lot these days, is there a difference again?
Yeah, I think when you say something as cosmetic surgery, that is actual surgery. That means you're going to put a needle or a knife onto somebody's skin, make a cut, and then do the procedure to effect the change. Aesthetic medicine is an all-encompassing term that includes lasers, fillers, injectables, intravenous infusions, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So it's all-encompassing, but it includes surgery. But I think cosmetic surgery is very specific. It's only operations.
Mm, all right. There could be many reasons that people opt elect for something like cosmetic surgery. As the surgeon, what do you talk to them about to ensure that they're considering this well, that they're making the right choice for them?
That's, I think, the most important part of being a good cosmetic surgeon. One must always remember that cosmetic surgery is unnecessary surgery, which means that you do not need the surgery, you want the surgery. You can very well live without the surgery. But plastic surgery in general, like you need cancer surgery, you need burn surgery. So you are more able to accept consequences that may not be perfect.
Mm.
But in cosmetic surgery, you've come for a perceived defect in your face, body, mind, and you come to the plastic surgeon to correct that defect.
Mm.
So two things I must be satisfied. I must be satisfied that the defect that the patient sees, I can see too. And I must be satisfied that the defect can be improved and corrected with minimal morbidity and downtime, with minimal complications.
Mm.
If I can satisfy these two criteria, only then I will recommend the procedure.
It's very subjective though, isn't it?
It is. Cosmetic surgery is very subjective.
Mm.
Yeah, you have a pretty nose. You know, other people might find their nose not so pretty, but their mothers will say their daughter's nose is always pretty. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Beauty is the eye of the beholder, you see. So it varies, unfortunately.
Mm.
Yeah, I've always had ladies who come into the clinic with their parents, and their parents actively try to discourage the young girl from getting cosmetic surgery done.
Oh.
Actively.
Okay. So you're talking about young girls, not adults, not adult women.
Above 18.
Mm.
Above 18, you know, they want something done to their face or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are dead against it. So they've come to a compromise to come and see a plastic surgeon and see, you know, get more information.
Mm.
So I'm the referee.
There must be so many stories you can tell.
I wish I could.
Actually, on that note, we do have a question from a listener. Is there a minimum age before considering cosmetic surgery, such as lip fillers or nose jobs?
I think the human body develops until the age of 18. So I think if you have an obvious deformity of your nose, like say you fractured your nose, for example, after rugby or something like that, then it's different. You should get it done early, immediately. But if it's purely cosmetic procedure, you're not happy with your tip, you want a sharper nose, etc., I think you should wait for an adult consentable age. Age of consent is 18 before going for the procedure.
Hmm.
This does not work in all societies. Like in Korea, parents give consent for young girls to get their double eyelids done as a birthday present, for example.
Oh.
But in Malaysia, I think we're still conservative. We'd rather wait, you know, until your body is complete, your mind is also mature, and the defect that you see at 16 persists at 18 as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you talked about how it is a surgery that you want. You perceive some sort of defect for whatever reason. And therefore, I think the words you used was you're not able to accept anything less than a perfect outcome, right?
Yes.
Now that, how do you talk to them about what that outcome would be? Again, ideal, well, in medicine, there's no guarantee.
No, there's no guarantee, you know. And then that's one of the most difficult conversations that we have with our patients, because we have to tell them that there are complications of the surgery. There are undesirable outcomes that may happen as well. For example, a surgery may turn out to be very perfect on the operating table. 3 days later, infection might set in. If infection sets in, then there's going to be scarring, deformity, etc., you see. So all this must be counselled. And generally, I take the patients through a before-after series of pictures to show them what is a reasonable result.
Mm.
And I also show them what's a bad result.
Mm.
And then I let them go and cool off first for 1 to 2 weeks before deciding to do the surgery.
And it's okay for you if they come back and say, you know what, I've changed my mind. No?
Oh, I'll be very happy.
Okay.
Because, you know, by then they've got, they've thought it through. And they decided the risk is not worth taking, you see? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, on the flip side, what if they have said no because they've come across an alternative that is promising, that's not bothering to take them through all these risks and things that you're doing?
Yes. Mm. Unfortunately, there are such charlatans abound, you see, in the industry where, like I said, it's an industry, which means the ultimate motive is to make money, financial gain. So people like this become pawns in the industry. And once they get a bad result, they just don't even care about them anymore. You know, they don't reply their SMSs, WhatsApps and stuff like that. And then they come to us for repair, which is very sad, you know.
Mm. Which, of course, is a lot more difficult after the fact.
It's a salvage procedure after that, you see.
Mm.
You know, the damage has already been done. Yeah, so we are trying to correct it as best as we can.
All right. Do get your questions in for Dr. Soma. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp our U mobile number at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. This is your chance to satisfy your curiosity, perhaps, about different aspects of cosmetic surgery or different issues that, you know, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you've been thinking about and wondering what's the truth about a lot of the things that you've read online or on social media, for instance. Dr. Soma Sundaran Satapam, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, in the studio for our Ask a Doctor segment, everything to do with plastic and cosmetic surgery. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoik. In the studio with me today, Dr. Soma Sundaran Satapam, a consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, for our open clinic show about facelifts, tummy tucks, and pretty much everything to do with plastic and particularly cosmetic surgery, an area which, you know, you may not have a medical need to undergo these procedures, but it's, you know, when it comes to our body and our face, we're never really happy with what we have, are we? And a surgical procedure may seem tempting to fix what Dr. Soma has called perceived defects, something that you feel you're not happy about. But is it really what you should do? This is the time to get your questions in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. You can either WhatsApp a note, a message, or a voice note, of course. You know, Dr. Soma, I thought maybe we could go through different parts of the body, including the face as well, and sort of just go head to toe. And I think one of our listeners has made it easy for us, given us a starting point, that maybe we can look at fat in the body and what can be done for fat removal. Our listener is asking, we used to see a lot of aggressive advertising for slimming salons, places that promise they can help you lose weight and sometimes flab in just a short number of weeks or months. It can be tempting because when I exercise, I still find it difficult to lose the extra weight around my tummy. But are these actually safe? How do I make sure, you know, if they are, or should I avoid them completely?
That's a loaded question. You know. Yeah, anyway, well, let me just tiptoe around this. You see, the advertising is aggressive because it's a multi-million dollar business, weight loss. I think it's the biggest problem, health problem in the country right now is overweight and obesity, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In Singapore and Malaysia, we find that almost 30 to 40% of children are actually overweight, if I'm not mistaken, as some studies show. So when you talk about weight loss salons and slimming centers, they have procedures, injectables, lasers, etc., to dissolve the fat, as they call it. I think they are effective, provided the amount of fat involved is not much.
Mm.
It's thin. That means they're not overly obese. But if they are definitely fat obese, that means your body mass index is above 35, for example, then I think it's only fair that they consider other forms of treatment to reduce their weight, like bariatric surgery or a gastric balloon, etc.
Mm.
I don't think slimming saloons and other centers are going to help them that kind of weight loss.
I see.
That's important, yeah.
So the slimming centers usually use non-surgical methods, and, you know, I've come across things like radio frequency, laser, like you mentioned, ultrasound, cryolysis. Lipolysis, maybe I've got that wrong. But so would you say generally maybe those can only target small amounts of fat reduction?
I think so. That's the word, you know. If you have a localized amount of fat, typically below your belly button, the little pouch there, may be perfect to go for this type of treatments.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Then maybe that can help reduce it. Avoid surgery, for example.
Mm.
But if you've had 3 children and you've had overhanging tummy, a clothesline tummy, as we call it, and you hate the body shape when you look at yourself in the mirror after a shower, time to see a plastic surgeon.
Oh, dear.
Yes, I know.
That is terrible. Clothes hanger belly. That's terrible.
I know.
But, you know, under your umbrella, something like liposuction, and that would be different from bariatric surgery, wouldn't it?
Definitely. A common misconception is that liposuction is a weight loss procedure. It is not. It is a body contouring procedure. At any one time, I think it's only safe to remove 5 to 10% of total body weight of a person. So if you're about 100 kilograms, the maximum you can remove is 5 to 10 kilograms, you see, which is not going to make a dent in the overall appearance of the person. But if you are 65, a 6-kilogram removal can make a significant change to your silhouette and the way you look and how the clothes drape on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to note that it's a body contouring procedure and it's not a weight loss procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And liposuction, if done on the right people, fabulous results.
Mm, okay, yeah. All right. There are things like fat burner injections, which I've come across online.
Yes.
They supposedly contain vitamins in injectable form. What's your perspective on these?
I think there's an FDA-approved fat burner injection called Kybella. It's sodium deoxycholate. And that actually dissolves fat in the double chin area. It's licensed only for that. But I think in Malaysia, people use it for small amounts of fat in the underarms, the bra roll, or the tummy. Yeah, mm. As long as it's not a large area.
Right.
And it is a reasonably effective for 1 to 2 centimeters of fat thickness. It does work.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a question about scarring. Keloids advertising related to a third-degree burn. How do I get rid of keloids aside from steroids injection? Just getting rid of keloids.
Yes, I think keloids is actually very unfortunate. What's a scar? What's a hypertrophic scar? And what's a keloid? 3 different things. A scar is flat and doesn't extend beyond the margins of trauma. Hypertrophic scar is a thick scar that's within the margins. A keloid scar is a protuberant scar extending beyond the margins, eating up normal tissues, causing you pain and itchiness, and sometimes even difficulty in motion. That means what? Movement becomes a problem. And the saddest fact about keloids in Malaysia is that it is not covered by insurance, which is sad, because it's actually quite a deforming condition, and it's a medical condition, but somehow the insurers in Malaysia consider it as a cosmetic problem.
Mm.
So treatment depends on the severity of the keloid. Some of them need to be excised and removed immediately. Others, you can treat them with steroid injections. But now recently, we have actually moved on from steroid to actually local anti-cancer drugs. You can inject them with the steroids to actually have almost 90 to 100% resolution of the keloids. Yeah, that's good. If you remove the keloid, you have to follow up with post-operative radiotherapy, like cancer radiotherapy. Like we treat them like locally invasive cancers, for example. Radiotherapy for cancer may be 30 sessions, for example, but for keloids, only 3 to 5 sessions. Short course.
Is that to ensure it doesn't
grow back again?
Mm.
Yes. Yeah.
Unfortunately, what you've just described, like you said, it's not covered by insurance.
No, it's not.
Mm.
Yes.
And therefore, going to be quite a financial undertaking.
Yeah, I mean, I think the radiotherapy will cost you about 6,000 to 7,000 ringgit, you know, then the surgical cost is there as well. Yes.
Mm. All right. We have another question. Somebody who wants to remain anonymous about breast augmentation. And I think that's another big area that comes under cosmetic surgery. This question is whether injecting silicone into breasts for augmentation is recommended.
Oh, definitely not.
Okay.
Definitely not.
Short answer.
Yes. This is actually illegal in the country. You're not supposed to do it. Anybody caught doing it will be hauled up. Yeah, only problem is, I know when I first started plastic surgery 30 years ago, it was going on. Until today, it's going on, all right, by fly-by-night operators. Mm. There is a demand for breast augmentation, and people just cannot afford the right way of getting to breast augmentation. Mm. It'll cost you anything between 25 to 30,000 ringgit to get it done in Malaysia. So, you know, some of these ladies find these people in hotels, and they inject liquid silicone to their breasts, and the breasts are deformed forever. They become hard, they become lumpy, and they develop pus, and pus oozes out. And sometimes they even end up in bilateral mastectomies. Yeah.
Yep. So what is the right way to undergo breast augmentation?
See a plastic surgeon and get a breast implant done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah, safe way.
And I think, you know, maybe coming back again to the kinds of things that you'd be talking to patients about, what they need to consider, how much do you enhance, you know, mm-hmm. why, and what is the outcome that you're looking for? How would you walk them through that conversation?
Usually the people who come to their plastic surgeon are very clear on what size they want to be. They know. And also, it also varies according to their job, the kind of job they do. And the stage of family that they're in, I mean, how old are the children? Do they have any more children coming in the way, you know, plans, etc. And most of these ladies that come to see me, either they are in their early 20s and they're going to do it for self-confidence so they look better with mm-hmm. clothes. And then I have the other range of ladies who have had their children and find that after breastfeeding, the breast disappeared. You know, poor things. You know, so then we make them back to what how they look like before. And the second group of ladies are very clear that they don't want it too big. They mm. want it just nice so that it looks nice under a dress. That's it.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm. Is it a purely aesthetic consideration there? Are there health considerations that you need to advise them about?
Well, I mean, implants have been around for many, many years. So we have to take them through the complications of implants like extrusion, contracture, malposition of the implants over time, etc. Do you get cancers with breast implants?
Mm, yeah.
Now, you do. It's called breast implant associated acute large cell lymphoma. Very, very rare. In Malaysia, I think there are about 10 cases so far. Worldwide, I think it's about 1,000. So it's eminently treatable but should be caught early, but quite rare.
Is that related to the material of the implant?
I think it's related to the texture of the implant itself. So now, instead of making it rough, they're making it micro-textured. Yeah, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But rare. How do women look out for it, though, if they have undergone?
They would see lumps in the breast after implants, and they might actually feel the implant floating in the bag of fluid. Ah. So if you feel that, then you have to go and see a plastic surgeon. Mm. A mammogram or an MRI will sort it out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Another question, is breast reduction considered cosmetic surgery?
That's another difficult thing. Now, a lot of ladies with very large breasts have got a chronic backache, you know, and they walk in a hunched position and they have chronic infection on their chest wall and their bra straps dig into their shoulders, causing deep, deep ruts. So we have tried to see if the backache is serious enough. You know, that there are actual changes in the MRI. If there are, then the insurance will cover. But if the MRI and the orthopedic surgeon says that, no, the backache is not related to the breast and, you know, it's just a muscular ache or stuff like that, then I'm afraid it's a purely cosmetic procedure after that.
Oh, is it possible to show that in an imaging?
Yes. So I've had one or two patients who actually managed to get breast reduction covered by the insurance because they had significant changes in their thoracic spine mm-hmm. on MRI.
I see.
And the orthopedic surgeons actually recommended the reduction, saying that they'll have long-term relief.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to touch on an area of breast surgery that perhaps is less spoken of in our society, gynecomastia surgery. Can you explain a little bit about that and who might you advise for that?
Okay, now gynecomastia surgery is basically male breast enlargement. See, when I first started plastic surgery in the 90s, male gynecomastia was actually quite rare, not common at all. Yeah, but recently, we find a lot of children with gynecomastia and young adults with gynecomastia. And some of us have been talking, and we think it's due to the hormonal enhancement of our livestock. Quick breeding, you know. So some of the hormones, obviously, you know, from the table into our bloodstream. Mm-hmm. So that's what happens. So, and these young men with gynecomastia, they cannot take off their T-shirts in public and they feel extremely embarrassed. So this is highly satisfying surgery for them. Highly recommended. They get their life back.
But you say it's being seen even in young boys.
Yes.
But you do the surgery only when they're in adulthood?
Not really. If the if the young man is growing up and he's become aloof, it's like psychological issues that he doesn't want to take off his T-shirt, doesn't want to go for physical activity in school, then you have to do it at that age. Yes.
Okay. We have more questions coming in, but perhaps we'll go for a quick break first and let our listeners get their questions in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Soma Sundran Satapam, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, answering a variety of your questions to do with plastic and cosmetic surgery. Everything from head to toe, he's here to answer them. So get your questions in. We'll be right back after a short break. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guest in the studio with me today, Dr. Soma Sundaran Satapam, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon. It's our open clinic segment, and Dr. Soma is here to answer all your questions about plastic and cosmetic surgeries and other procedures. Call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a question here, Dr. Soma. What would the risk of fatality be for these cosmetic surgeries? And would a tummy tuck be considered being the highest risk?
I think if you have even one fatality during cosmetic surgery, that's a disaster. It should not happen at all. And it's not unavoidable, you know, and as long as the cosmetic surgery is done in a hospital under general anesthesia with an anesthetist, no matter how big the cosmetic surgery, usually is very safe. That's what I want to say now. Risk of fatality depends on the extent of cosmetic surgery and the number of procedures done per session. There are people who actually come and go for a total body makeover. That means they have breast implants done, they get the tummy tucks done, they get liposuction done in a marathon 8-hour, 9-hour session. That's risky.
That's not advisable, surely.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that just happened, all right? So that is risky. So, but I think if you do just 3-4-hour surgeries, perfectly fine. And tummy tuck is a very common surgery done regularly, and you will not see any fatality from it.
We do often read about botched surgeries, often with the kinds of disastrous results that I'm sure is what our listeners are concerned about. And we've had you on the show before as well, Dr. Soma. We talked about how some of these are not done in a proper hospital with an anesthetist, you know, in attendance. So talk a little bit about where should one go to seek out these surgeries? What's the danger when they're being done in hotel rooms, like you've said?
Yeah. No, I think if you're talking about surgery per se, then somebody's going to put a knife on you. I think you've got to make sure that it is an accredited surgeon by the government of Malaysia. And all plastic surgeons are accredited by the National Specialist Register. You just Google National Specialist Register and the website comes up beautifully. You can put plastic surgeons and the 120-odd plastic surgeons in the country come out in front of you. Anyone who's not there is not a plastic surgeon. Full stop. You're on your own. Okay?
Yeah.
So go in with your eyes open. Next thing is make sure that the facility where your surgery is being done is adequate, safe, and has the ability to deal with complications if it should arise. Like during the procedure, They give you sedation, but suddenly if you were to stop breathing, for example, there's an anesthetist, there's the emergency services on standby to make sure there's no untoward incidents.
Mm.
That's imperative. You've got to make sure that the facility that you're going to is accredited and has got everything there to make sure it's a safe experience.
How do we know that it is a procedure that requires a surgeon to do it? You know, there are many things that sound like they're not invasive. Peels,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
No.
So,
No, I mean, as long as you don't need a knife, it's not invasive.
Okay. So then those would come under aesthetic medicine practitioners. Mm. What is a way for people to verify that the practitioner is qualified as well?
I think the aesthetic practitioners have got what they call a LCP, Licentiated Cosmetic Practice, given by the Ministry of Health. As long as your doctor has the LCP, you're in safe hands.
All right. Yeah. So check for that. We have CT who's asking, what about removing eye bags? Is there any danger in that?
I think eye bags and eyelid surgeries are one of the commonest surgeries done in the country by all plastic surgeons. And just like any surgery, there are risks involved. And I think the significant risk that if there's too much of fat removed, you have ball and socket syndrome, whereby your eyeball is within a sunken socket. Doesn't look very nice. Okay, so the amount of fat removed might be just enough to get rid of the eye bags, but make sure the eye looks nice at the end of the procedure. Second thing is, if too much skin is removed, there's too much scarring, your eyelid may actually droop and separate from the eyeball. And that, again, does not look nice and needs corrective surgery after that.
Mm. So can you reverse those effects?
Yes, usually you can. You can. But again, another procedure, more complications, you know, so better not go down the road the first place.
I see.
Get it well done, yeah.
Mm. So you wouldn't advise for people to undergo these procedures?
No, I would. I do a couple of eye bag surgeries a week.
Okay.
So as long as well done, it's safe.
Okay.
No problem at all, yeah.
All right. What about, let's look at another area of the face, the lips and chin. What are some issues that people are most concerned about there?
Lips is generally the fact that some ladies have thin lips, you know, and they'll want it to make it more plump, more full. And that's where fillers come in. I think that's the best way to make them more full over time. I've had patients who had too thick lips and it's too bulbous and they want it reduced. So you can have a lip reduction surgery as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you make your lips look more nicer. That's what both can be done.
Right.
Chin is basically a chin augmentation, isn't it? You have a weak chin and the ratio from your nose to your chin looks receded.
Okay.
It's not protuberant enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we can either give fillers or you can put an implant inside.
I see.
Yeah, fillers, aesthetic doctors can do it. An implant, a plastic surgeon can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Double chin, I think, would be something else that a lot of people...
Double chin is fat under the chin. You know, so you have a double chin that you need liposuction or the fat dissolving injections.
Mm.
They work as well.
I see. Mm. All right. Anything else with regard to the face area and skin on the face as well? I would think wrinkles are another one of the your bread and butter procedures.
Yes, I mean, generally people come to see a plastic surgeon if they have a sagging mid-face. The mid-face is between your eyes and your lips, the mid-face. And if it's sagging, you get the folds on the side of your nose very deep, you get jowls, you know, and generally you look tired. So facelift is one of the best procedures for these individuals, whereby the scars are well hidden within the hairline and around the ear, and the muscles and fat can be repositioned to the place where they were when you were youthful, and extra skin removed. So you can have an astounding effect with a facelift.
So you're basically making cuts and sort of pulling it back.
Yeah, a cut around the ear. Mm. And then from that location, we are redoing the muscles and fat of your face to its correct position.
You say back to when, you know, it was when you were youthful.
Mm-hmm.
But how much can you really turn back time? Will gravity still exert its effects again?
Oh, gravity wins. Hands down.
Mm.
Yeah, so... I've had to redo my facelifts that I did 10 years ago.
All right. So that's a pretty...
Yeah, 5 to 10 years, if it lasts, it's successful.
How many times can you redo them, though?
I think the record, as far as I remember, a French surgeon is 8 times.
Eight times?
On the same patient. Okay.
With no risks?
Well,
you wouldn't say no risks.
The last facelift the lady did was when she was 80-something, and after that, the surgeon refused to do it anymore. You know, different surgeons did it over time, you know? Yeah.
Mm. All right. Yes. The other one would be the injections, you know, for wrinkles. Again, you know, how much can you turn back time?
I think it's not about turning back time with injectables. It's more of making sure you get a more charming and fresher you. Turning back time, it is surgery. You have to reposition the fat, the muscles, remove the extra skin and basically iron out the face. But with injectables and lasers, you're looking at getting a more fresher you.
Mm.
Yes.
So some people have seen pictures of, shall we say, high-profile figures who clearly have undergone several Botox injections. Mm. And, you know, it doesn't look pretty sometimes.
Yes.
You know, you have this fear that after a while, everything gets frozen. What's actually happening there?
I think they've got this windswept frozen look because too much of Botox has been given, you know. So they've kind of paralyzed. So they have this wide open surprise look all the time. Mm. That's not nice.
Okay. Yeah. So again, that one, there's a limit. La.
Yeah, I mean, it's overdone, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do it nicely and make it look very natural as so. Yes.
Okay. And that's something that your surgeon would, you know, be talking to you about.
Yes, even the aesthetic medicine doctors, they're quite good at it.
Mm.
Yeah, they can do that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we talked about minimum age limits, and since you mentioned the 80-something-year-old lady for the facelifts, is there a maximum age limit for cosmetic surgery?
No, there is none. Because if you put an age limit for cosmetic surgery, you'll be accused of ageism, you know. That's not fair. You can be a very fit 80 years old.
That's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've known 70 years old who actually run marathons. So I think it depends on the individual. As long as they've got no major medical problems, they're fit, they're healthy, and they want to get something done. And if it's medically, you know that they can go through it well with minimal complications, why not?
Mm. Yeah. So you'd walk through all those as you would with any major surgical procedure that a patient would have to undergo anyway.
Yes, so they'd get their ECGs, chest x-rays, blood works all done, make sure they're fit for anesthesia.
Mm.
Yeah.
We've gone pretty much head to midriff. We talked about fat reduction, that will probably cover the thighs. Anything in the leg areas that people are usually concerned about as well?
I think it's just excess fat, really, deposition along your knees, your medial thighs and your sides of your thighs and your hips.
Mm.
Yeah, the term love handle sounds so romantic, but it is not romantic in real life.
Mm.
Yeah, it's nothing romantic about a love handle.
Mm.
So all that can be treated with liposuction and it's quite safe.
All right.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up, Dr. Soma, we did emphasize how important it is that when you're sitting down across from the person asking about the procedure, that you are also able to see what is this defect that they are unhappy about and that they want changed. What happens if that individual really decides, I want to do this, I'll go through it all, everything, and later has second thoughts?
Well, if he has second thoughts after the surgery, it's a bit too late.
Mm.
Surgery has been done, you know. As long as he's, ambivalent about the surgery before surgery, that's fine. You can always postpone it, cancel it, you know?
Mm.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So any doubts have to come up?
Early.
Early.
Hmm.
There's no question or concern that's too trivial, I suppose.
No, never, never. I always tell my patients that the moment you walk out of my room, immediately you'll think that, should have asked Dr. Soma this question.
Mm.
I always tell them, just WhatsApp us and we'll answer, you know. The best patient is a well-informed patient.
Yep.
The more the patient knows, the better it is for everybody.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's okay. Come to you with all the questions.
To any plastic surgeon all over Malaysia, please have your list of questions and get it all cleared.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. Would you have a final message for our listeners today?
I think cosmetic surgery in Malaysia is booming. And we're also becoming a regional centre now. I'm getting a lot of patients from Singapore and Indonesia coming in for cosmetic surgery. So, like I said, buyer beware. Price is not everything. And if you're doing something to your body, chances are it's going to be a one-time affair and you're going to live with it for the rest of your life. Choose the best person that you trust the surgery with.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, advice with us today, Dr. Somasundaran Satapam, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, for our Ask a Doctor segment. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.